This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Dahlia Lithwick is senior editor at slate.com and the legal analyst for National Public Radio's Day-to-Day program, and she is probably one of the very busiest writers and reporters in recent memory, especially this week, and we are so lucky to have you with us. Who knew weeks ago when we booked this that the Supreme Court would be announcing some of its most major decisions in years on Monday? So you were saying before we went on the air that this has been an incredibly busy week for you, and that you've been at the court, you've been in Washington.
Yeah, no, this is like the equivalent of Oscar week. You know, this is except without the glamour. But yeah, it's been, you know, all the landmark cases are coming down. Probably the biggest case of the term will come down tomorrow.
Which is what?
The two cases about schools that have voluntary desegregation programs, one in Seattle and one in Kentucky. These are not college affirmative action programs. These are voluntary programs that schools have taken on to sort of try to have a slightly more mixed racial composition in the student body. And the question of whether schools can voluntarily use race to sort of even out the racial composition of the classrooms is huge, huge. I mean, the court stands, I think, probably pretty realistically poised to strike down the affirmative action decision that came out of Michigan only a few years ago.
So we want to talk about some of the decisions. That, of course, is tomorrow. And just get a little closer to that microphone. That'd be great. We want to talk about the decisions that came down on Monday. And I guess no longer do we have to wonder if this new Supreme Court is going to tilt to the right. That is no longer in doubt. It is tilting. It's official. As of this week, we are tilted. This is indeed a conservative court, thanks to Justice Roberts and Samuel Alito, who recently joined.
Yeah, no, I think there's probably no question that the three big, big speech cases that came out on Monday all sort of go toward, you know, strong, strong suppression of student speech, very strong suppression of voters who, taxpayers who seek to interfere with the president's faith-based initiatives, but very strong support of corporate and union speech in the McCain-Feingold campaign reform effort. So what you're seeing is a court that I think is very, very, very generous, again, towards big corporations, and much less generous to what you and I might call the little guy.
Yeah. Dahlia Lithwick is our guest, and where should we start? What's the ruling you think that came down this week that struck you the most, the one you went to first and said, oh my goodness?
Well, for all the wrong reasons, it was probably the bong hits for Jesus case, Coy. Not because I think it's the most constitutionally interesting case, although it's certainly very, very constitutionally important if you're talking about the world of student speech, but just because it had the words bong hits for Jesus in it. And let me tell you, watching Chief Justice John Roberts read from the bench his opinion in this case and say the words to a hushed room, bong hits for Jesus, was maybe the high point. That and Anna Nicole Smith were my two high points as a Supreme Court reporter. But it's a terrifically important case, certainly if you're thinking about the world of what students are allowed to say in school. And the court really did, I think, erode student free speech rights. And you know, to my view, the reason it was such an important case was that it did it on a pretty tenuous basis. I think the Chief Justice had to reach quite far to find that this 14-foot banner that a student had unfurled, he did it, as he expressly said throughout the litigation, the student said, just to get on TV. It was the Olympic torch relay running through Juneau, Alaska. He wanted to be on the cameras. He unfurled this enormous banner, not on school property, across the street.
And not as a, he wasn't in school at the time. They released
school. They let the students out. So he was 18 years old. So we're not talking about a 10-year-old. And the sign said, bong hits for Jesus, a phrase that we all, I think, can agree is nonsensical. The student was disciplined. He was, in fact, suspended for a few days. And he brought this First Amendment claim. And the Ninth Circuit upheld that his free speech rights had been infringed. No. 5-4, the Roberts Court says the words bong hit for Jesus are clear advocacy of illegal drug use. Now, as I wrote on Monday, and I would ask you now, how can it be advocacy if it doesn't even have a verb in it? But, you know, the court really stretched to find a way to say this was a clear message advocating, you know, the use of illegal drugs and that the teacher was well within her rights to suppress it as drug advocacy. And as you can imagine, the four dissenters, the four more liberal moderate justices on the court, were really horrified. They said this just really flies in the face of a long, long history of jurisprudence that says, you know, starting in 1969 with the Tinker case where students wore black armbands to protest the Vietnam War, and the court famously said students do not shed their free speech rights at the schoolhouse gates. The courts have been very careful to say students have, as long as they're not inciting violence or being obscene, they can say whatever nonsense they want in school. That's so important. And as of Monday, that's not true anymore.
Of all places where you would think a human being should be able to speak up and say something that you may not agree with, it would be in an American school. But as of Monday, as you say, you can't do that anymore. You got to keep your mouth shut.
Right. And certainly two of the concurring justices, Justice Sam Alito, the newest judge, and Justice Anthony Kennedy, who's we like to call the swing judge, although he's not really swinging all that much anymore. But they tried to sort of confine the Roberts opinion to say, no, if this had been actual political discussion, if he was making a serious political point, maybe that would have been okay. We don't want to start, you know, telling students they can't say don't legalize drugs. But who is going to draw the line between, you know, making a serious, important political point and just being goofy? And does the court really want to get into that business in the first place? I don't really think so.
Yeah, I feel very strongly about this, and I think all of us who live here in Charlottesville, of all places, Mr. Jefferson's hometown, should feel strongly. In a free society, you either have free speech or you don't have free speech. And here, this conservative court rules this week, you don't. This 18-year-old kid, not even in school at the time, he was, you know, and just obviously wanting to get on TV, being a joker, doesn't have free speech.
Yeah, and it's so, I think you made this point, but it's worth hammering it home. You know, schools of all places that are supposed to be inculcating civic values, you know, the notion of what it is to have a free and open conversation, to say this entire issue is now off the table because we're going to stretch and strain and find this nonsensical phrase to mean something it doesn't mean, that's a pretty breathtaking departure from what it is that most of us think schools should be doing.
Has the reaction, Dahlia Lithwick is our guest, has the reaction been similar to the Kelo case, where when they came out, then the nation cried, oh, no, we don't agree with that? Have you seen that type of thing here?
I mean, I've certainly seen an awful lot of blowback on this particular case. I think that this one resonates, as far as I can tell, because, you know, people really do feel, with the exception of Clarence Thomas, who I should say wrote a concurring opinion in this case that not only cited against the school, but said, and moreover, we should go back and overrule Tinker. That black armbands case was wrongly decided. Students shouldn't even be able to protest the war in school. But I think with the exception of Thomas, I think most people really do feel pretty strongly that students need to be allowed to express themselves, and that as long as they're not harming anybody, inciting violence, you know, undermining some academic mission of the school, they really, it's so important that they be allowed to speak. And so, you know, whether there will be a massive public outcry, I don't know. I think in one sense, the trick of this case was that because the phrase is so sort of strange, I mean, if he had just held up a sign that said,
everybody get high,
pot is fine,
yeah,
he probably wouldn't have garnered this kind of attention. So the funny paradox is that the weirdness of this phrase, the sheer meaninglessness of bong hits for Jesus, has been the thing, I think, that elevated it right into the middle of the national discourse. So you know, that both has sort of, the weirdness of it has sort of hurt him with the court. It's certainly enormously helpful in terms of getting the national conversation focused on it.
Dahlia Lithwick is a legal analyst for National Public Radio's Day-to-Day program and is senior editor at Slate.com. The other rulings in the Supreme Court, they decided, they sort of changed some of the recent legislation in Congress regarding the elections and campaign finance reform, which everyone hailed. Boy, these are overdue changes here in campaign finance, and this conservative court went in and tinkered with it and changed it now.
This is a terrifically thorny problem. On the one hand, you have this massive public outcry, you know, that in this particular case, we were dealing with the 2002 Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, As you said, everybody felt it was long overdue. This is just one provision of it. It was a ban on what we call issue ads. So it was not a ban on, and it was a ban on spending soft money on issue ads. So it's a little bit complicated. But these issue ads are not, don't vote for Coy, he's a bad guy. These are ads that say, you know, in a blackout period right before an election, that say, Coy Barefoot is really awful.
Right.
He has
He's
voted
got speeding
for
tickets.
This. Or- he beats his family. Call Coy and let him know how you feel.
Yeah.
So it's not expressly saying vote for Coy's opponent. It's not an advocacy ad, as the court would say. It's an issue ad because it's supposed to be teaching the public something. Well, but of course, we all know what these ads do. And the ads in question said things like Russ Feingold is really horrible. Call Senator Feingold and tell. And a group called Wisconsin Right to Life really, really wanted to sort of, quote, educate the public about Feingold's stance on abortion and on filibustering judges. But at the same time, they were obviously clobbering him right before an election with heaps and heaps of soft money. So this ban had been upheld only 4 years ago by the Supreme Court. They said this ban is okay because these issue ads are not issue ads. They're clearly thinly disguised advocacy ads, and the ban is okay. Well, that was when Sandra Day O'Connor was on the court. And with the mere change in composition of the court, what we saw this week was a flip, a 5-4 vote going the other way, now saying, oh, these ads are speech. They're core political protected speech. And so even though, as Justice David Souter said in his dissent, all these ads do is foster cynicism. People hate them. They make people very cynical and depressed about the, you know, nature of political discourse. It's too bad. This, says the court, is core, important, unsuppressible political speech.
We're talking with Dahlia Lithwick, a senior editor at Slate.com. And, of course, there's a lot of groups on the left and the right who are very excited about this. Because
right.
Now they can influence elections again.
Right. And it's groups, you know, ranging from the most incredible, you know, the NRA and the ACLU were together on this, saying this is important core political speech. And to be fair, you know, small, little, tiny PACs who only have a little bit of money, some of whom also really were opposed to this ban because they want to make their voices heard as well. But for all of us who just don't want to see those commercials before elections, we don't think they're honest. We don't think that groups should be pouring millions and millions and millions of dollars into these sort of hateful advertising. Our sense of that this is not doing anything to sort of help elections has been completely ignored. And I should say the will of the Congress was completely ignored.
Yeah, yeah. Other rulings this week, there was a bunch of other, there were two other key rulings that came out on Monday.
Let me talk about the one that I think is didn't get a lot of attention, but was very, very interesting. And this was the challenge to President Bush's faith-based community initiatives program. So this was when back when President Bush initially got elected, you'll recall he wanted to tear down the wall between church and state, and he wanted religious groups to be able to provide government services. And so what he did was he launched this faith-based initiatives program. It essentially consisted of a bunch of offices, people giving speeches, going out to religious groups and having what some critics described as, quote, revival meetings, but trying to convince religious groups to sort of get involved in providing services. At some point, one atheist group felt that this had just way crossed over the line, that the president was clearly spending money to advance religion, and tried to bring an establishment clause claim saying under the First Amendment, look, you know, the government can't establish religion. What is he doing going out and giving money to these religious groups? And they shouldn't have had standing to bring the case. And this is a standing case. The whole issue in the case was whether they could even walk into a courtroom, except that there's a long, long, long standing 1969 case that says violations of religion, of the religion clauses, of the establishment clause, are so serious that the mere fact that you pay taxes, Coy, is enough to get you into court. So that usually the fact that you're a
taxpayer. So that a private citizen who's a taxpayer in our country could bring a case against the White House, against the president, for using public money to support religious groups.
Exactly. And this is the tiny, narrow exception that the court found in 1969. You can't do it if you don't like the White House's policy on the war, but you can do it when the White House starts to violate the Establishment Clause.
Because the separation of church and state is so fundamental to the American idea of democracy and freedom.
Right.
It's
and,
absolutely key.
And Madison had famously said, you can't even spend threepence, you know, not even three pennies of my money to enshrine a church religion. That's how offensive it is to people. Well, Not so much anymore. After Monday, the court said they didn't overrule FLAS, the 1969 case. And that's something that's also worth talking about. There's suddenly this amazing tension between the court's conservatives, where you have in every one of the cases I'm describing, you have Scalia and Thomas saying, burn it down. whatever that bad precedent was, it sucks. Overrule it. And so, you've got Thomas saying, let's do away with the tinker, with the armbands case. In this case, you have Scalia writing, I guess, what's supposed to be a concurrence, but boy, it read like a dissent, where he's just tearing a strip out of Justices Alito and Roberts for not going as far as he would in overruling FLAST. Alito has this beautiful line in his majority opinion where he says, we're not going to overrule FLAST, this 1969 taxpayer case. We're going to leave it where we found it, as though it's like in a gutter somewhere. And so
and we're not going to overrule it yet.
Right. Well, that's,
it's implied. Yeah.
That's what a lot of court watchers are saying, that this is not that necessarily that Roberts and Alito are less conservative than Thomas and Scalia, but that they need to kind of be on the court for more than 2 years before they go burning stuff down.
Right, right. It's quite alarming. I mean, just to sort of sum up, I find this alarming. It no longer is it a bummer to see this kind of thing. Now I have kids in this country, and I sort of see this as alarming, this tilt of this high court taking this view on things. I don't see any of this as good.
There's been a sequence of very, very disturbing cases that have come down in the last, beyond the partial birth abortion case, which was, a dramatic reversal. The court had only just heard an identical partial birth abortion case a few years ago and said
when
no.
When O'Connor was there.
When O'Connor was on the court. So the fact that it's sort of reversing itself systemically on things that were the law of the land, only a year or two ago is very distressing. But there is this real trend that we're seeing, to throw a woman out of court who had a sex discrimination suit. Sorry, you didn't file it soon enough. Last week, they closed the courthouse doors on a guy who the judge had instructed him wrongly about a deadline to file a habeas petition. The judge made the error. The guy filed it too late. The court said, sorry, you filed it too late, even if the judge told you wrongly. So there's just this sort of very cramped, crab, I almost want to say mean view of litigants that, sorry, I don't care how you get into the courthouse door. We're going to fling you out again.
Unless you're a corporation, get out. If you're a corporation, come on in and sit down. We love you. But if you're just a citizen taxpayer, don't look to the courts for remediation anymore.
It's certainly reads that way. I think that it's all, and this goes back to, I covered the John Roberts confirmation hearing. I covered the Alito hearing. And over you saw Democrats in the Senate just struggling for a way to ask questions about, are you going to be in favor of the little guy? Are you going to help out the little guy? But it kept coming out as like, do you beat your wife? Do you hate women? These are not questions about do they hate women. I don't think these guys hate women. But their view of the courts is so small. And they're real, I think you're looking at, and particularly it's not an accident that the court's liberals are a generation older. They're in their 70s and their 80s. And these are guys who are in their 50s and 60s. This is the post-Watergate conservative generation. And they're very different, even from Chief Justice Rehnquist, who was very conservative. These are guys who, after Watergate, think that the executive branch got cut off at the knees, that the court, that the Warren court was out of its mind, and they're trying to fix that. And it's a mission, and there's a certain kind of playbook quality that's pretty intense to watch.
Dahlia Lithwick is a senior editor at Slate.com and a legal analyst for National Public Radio's Day to Day program, and we are fortunate she's also a member of our community here in Charlottesville.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.